Okay, we're going to start. Public Health will come to order. Secretary, please take the roll.
Today is Friday, April 7th, 2023. Vice Chair Lenz.
Here.
Senator Beard.
Here.
Senator Glimm.
Here.
Senator Gross.
Here.
Senator Heinbaugh.
Excused.
Vice Chair Kelker.
Excused.
Senator Molnar.
I have to apply for America Has Talent. I was wondering if we could speed this up. I'm here.
Senator Weber.
Here.
Chair McGilvery.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just to remind the audience, to turn your cell phones off, please put them on silence. There's a form in the back of the room to sign as a proponent or an opponent of this bill and the agency that you are representing. Just to remind the audience and the committee that all our mics are live. We are on camera. So with that, we'll begin the hearing on House Bill 862.
I appreciate your involvement.
Good.
As the microphone falls apart on me. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. Mike Hopkins, H-O-P-K-I-N-S, representative for House District 92 out of Missoula, bringing you here for your consideration House Bill 862. House Bill 862 is the Hyde Amendment. This says that taxpayer dollars cannot be used for elective abortion in the state of Montana. I've been in this legislature for a little while. I have definitely come away with the impression that members of this legislature on both sides have pretty strong opinions when it comes to this subject. I certainly have strong opinions when it comes to the general subject of abortion, but I think one of the nice things for House Bill 862 is it doesn't care what my opinion is on abortion. Couldn't care less what anybody's opinion is here when it comes to abortion. It doesn't say that abortion is good, doesn't say abortion is bad. It simply says if you want to access elective abortion in the state of Montana, you don't use taxpayer dollars to do it, which has, for the better part of the last 40 years, been one of the few places that we can find agreement when it comes to this subject. I hope that is still the case. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will sit down for proponents, opponents, look forward to the conversation, and reserve to close.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. Do we have proponents for House Bill 862?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt Brower, B-R-O-W-E-R, and I currently serve as the executive director of the Montana Catholic Conference. I speak on behalf of the two Roman Catholic bishops of Montana, and I'm here today to voice our support for House Bill 862. Abortion is no doubt a very divisive issue in our country and around our state. People on both sides of the issue have very strong beliefs. While there are those who believe abortion should be legal and state resources ought to be utilized to provide abortions, we and others believe as a matter of conscience that it is wrong to kill an unborn child. In Montana, women who choose to have an abortion are legally permitted to do so, but it does not follow that state taxpayers should have to fund those procedures. House Bill 862 affords due respect for the consciences of individuals who do not wish to contribute to funding abortion, and this is no small number of taxpayers. For example, a Marist poll released just this past January showed that 6 in 10 Americans oppose using tax dollars to pay for abortions. We believe that House Bill 862 represents good policy and values the rights of conscience for those opposed to contributing their personal resources through tax dollars for the destruction of innocent human life. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on behalf of the Montana Catholic Conference, I urge you to concur and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any other proponents? Proponents in the room.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Angus, A-N-G-U-S. I represent myself in opposition to HB 862.
Are you an opponent or
Oh, I'm
proponent?
Sorry. I misheard. I thought you said opponent.
Sorry.
My apologies.
No worries. Any proponents? Okay, seeing none in the room. I don't think we have any online, although I have some on my sheet. JC, do we have anybody online? You're muted. Okay, while we're getting our technology fixed, we can go to opponents in the room. Sorry. Opponents in the room.
Hello again. Sorry again for that confusion. Again, my name is Ann Angus, A-N-G-U-S, and I oppose HB 862. This bill effectively bans abortion for anyone who relies on public funding for health care. Those using public funds often do not have other resources available to them, making this equivalent to a full ban for a certain demographic. But I take particular offense at the hollow rape and incest exception. This exception is an empty PR gesture meant to make this ban seem reasonable, but there is nothing reasonable about taking away safe and necessary medical care. And it is especially cruel to those who are in the midst of processing sexual trauma and need prompt care without additional barriers. We would never ask someone as they are bleeding out to explain why they should be allowed to receive a blood transfusion, but that is exactly what this ban does to rape and incest victims. With this ban, you are asking victims to prove that they deserve to regain control over their body and their lives. And survivors will tell you, it is not always that simple to walk into a police station. From the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, About 30% of sexual assault victims will report their attacks. There are countless reasons why someone chooses not to report, but just like someone's choices around a pregnancy, it is not your business. I ask you to vote no on HB 862 for the insurmountable burden it will place on the victims that are supposedly exempt in this bill. Survivors do not owe you their stories for you to judge whether or not they are worthy of accessing critical medical care. We ask the same of no one else.
Thank you. Any other opponents to House Bill 862 in the room?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephanie McDowell, M-C-D-O-W-E-L-L. I am here in opposition to House Bill 862 as the Executive Director of Bridger Care in Bozeman, where we provide sliding fee scale sexual and reproductive health care, including referral for abortion. The people that are in need of publicly funded health care are the people that we care for. We believe that no one should be denied insurance coverage for an abortion or any other kind of health care just because they are low income and utilize public health insurance. We have heard from proponents that this bill isn't about abortion access and is only about taxpayer dollars. What I find concerning about these statements is that it erases our most vulnerable people who are currently relying on public insurance to make ends meet. People who find themselves in a difficult time in their lives who need our support now more than ever. If this bill is enacted, it will cost Montana taxpayers millions of dollars to cover the higher costs of labor and delivery and the kind of support needed by low-income families like housing, food, and childcare. So this bill not only dehumanizes our vulnerable, low-income Montanans, but it also costs taxpayers more. We oppose this attack on bodily autonomy for our most vulnerable neighbors at a time when they need it most. We urge a no vote on House Bill 862. Thank you.
Next.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Smith, S-M-I-T-H. I'm the executive director of Blue Mountain Clinic in Missoula. We oppose House Bill 862, which seeks to prohibit public funding of abortion. If enacted, this law would act as a functional ban on abortion access for low-income Montanans. This bill is another attempt to take away the rights of Montanans. It seeks to make pregnant persons second-class citizens. We find the most troubling thing about this bill is that it singles out those with the least access to financial resources. How can you justify banning abortion only for the poorest of Montanans? Anti-abortion legislators are not being responsive to their constituents. We have data from three recent public opinion polls, all of which demonstrate that a strong majority of Montanans do not want government interference with abortion access in our state. This bill does just that. It strips away basic human rights from those who are struggling the most. And if enacted, it will cost Montana taxpayers millions of dollars. Research from All Above All demonstrates that 1 in 4 low-income pregnant persons will be forced to carry an unwanted pregnancy to term if Medicaid does not cover the cost of abortion care. For those individuals who are forced against their will to give birth, our public support systems, such as Montana Medicaid, and by extension, Montana taxpayers who fund those services, will be responsible for covering not only the higher cost of labor and delivery care, but also the related costs of supporting young families who need financial assistance with housing, nutritional meals, and child care. Targeting low-income Montanans with this kind of abortion ban is extremely malicious. A study published in January 2020 by the National Bureau of Economic Research found that when someone is unable to obtain an abortion care they are seeking, it quadruples the odds that the new parent and their child live in poverty. Please vote no on House Bill 862. Thank you.
Next opponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sean Rager. That's R-E-A-G-O-R. It's nice to be with you this afternoon. I am with the Montana Human Rights Network, and we oppose this bill. We recognize that the Montana Human Rights Network, one of the most critical and fundamental rights for parents is when and how to have a family. And oftentimes we realize that when people are in difficult financial situations, adding additional burden of trying to have to raise and care for a young one can increase that situation, can make it more difficult, and parents should be able to choose how their children and what situation their children are born into this world and how they live. For these reasons, we oppose this bill. Thank you.
Hello, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leah Shea, L-E-A-H-S-H-E-A, and I'm here on behalf of the Susan Wicklund Fund, Montana Statewide Abortion Fund. We oppose this bill. This bill would create significant hardships for Montanans already struggling to make ends meet by creating a functional ban on abortion for people with low incomes. Abortion is an important part of health care. It is legal and protected in Montana. It is completely unethical to create barriers to accessing this legal right for any Montanan, let alone targeting Montanans with low incomes. Our fund works to remove barriers to accessing abortion care by providing financial support and advocating for improved access. We are committing to helping those who would be hurt and discriminated against by this bill, including to aid them in paying for their abortion care and related expenses. But frankly, this shouldn't be necessary. We shouldn't have to rely on organizations like mine to make up for the discriminatory and unconstitutional laws that this body passes that prevents Montanans from being able to make their own personal medical decisions. We oppose this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robin Turner. My name is spelled R-O-B-I-N-T-U-R-N-E-R, and I rise on behalf of the American Civil Liberties Union of Montana in opposition of House Bill 862. This bill goes against well-settled law and the Montana Constitution. Montana's Constitution provides some of the strongest protections in the nation for privacy, procreative autonomy, and equal protection. Under it, an individual has a right to access health care, including a pre-viability abortion, from a qualified health care provider of their choice. The choice to exercise the constitutional right to procreative autonomy should not be dependent on income. That violates the spirit and the letter of both the statutory and constitutional law of Montanans, of Montana. All Montanans have the right to individual dignity and are entitled to and deserving of equal treatment under the law. Nearly 30 years ago, in District Court case Jeanette R. v. Ellery, Montana's constitutional rights to privacy, procreative autonomy, and equal protection were held to prohibit the state from limiting access to abortion care services through Medicaid rulemaking. As explained in that case, the right to privacy protects the individual from undue governmental interference, and although the state is under no obligation to fund an individual's choice to a right of privacy, once it has entered an area covered by that zone of privacy, which includes reproductive autonomy, the state must be neutral. This ban will have costly results for both low-income patients and the state. Coercing patients into care in a pregnancy to term is not only more expensive than providing abortion, but will create longer-lasting financial costs and increased risks to the pregnant patient. For many of the reasons also spoken before, we oppose this bill, and I will add the Montana Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence also stands in opposition to this bill. Thank you.
Next opponent.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Hillary Ann Crosby. That is spelled H-I-L-L-A-R-Y hyphen A-N-N-E, last name Crosby, C-R-O-S-B-Y. I always lose my breath after trying to do that. I'm testifying today because I oppose House Bill 862. This is an unconstitutional and immoral infringement on the reproductive health and well-being of our communities. This is a functional ban on abortion access that specifically targets low-income Montanans, and if it passes, will cost us as taxpayers millions of dollars as the state works to defend this indefensible bill. I urge a do not pass on House Bill 862, and I urge this committee to remember the oaths you took to uphold the Montana Constitution, which very clearly includes the right to privacy. I would also remind this committee and the bill sponsor that the right to privacy in Montana is not a punchline for a cheap joke. It's a sacred civil liberty. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Celie Davidson. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and as a staff member of Blue Mountain Clinic. I oppose HB 862, which seeks to restrict Medicaid coverage for abortion. Abortion care is safe and legal in Montana. To reiterate the opposition testimonies before mine, denying access to care for low-income Montanans puts their lives in real jeopardy. The risk of death from pregnancy and childbirth is 14 times higher than any risk related to abortion care. Forcing someone to give birth against their will is unconscionable, and Montanans will not stand for this government intrusion into our private lives and our personal decisions. In Montana, we take care of each other. If you pass this law, you will be responsible for harming Montana families who are already struggling. I urge you to vote no on HB 862. Please do not burden Montanans with the high cost of paying for forced childbearing. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Quinn Leighton, L-E-I-G-H-T-O-N, Director of External Affairs for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Montana. We rise in opposition to this bill. Access to Medicaid coverage for abortion with minimal barriers is critical for Montanans with lower incomes. The groundbreaking Turnaway study authored by researcher Diana Green Foster found that pregnant people who were denied access to abortion are more likely to live in poverty, as are their children. Forcing patients to continue their pregnancies will only cause this financial hardship and harm to Montanans' overall health. This has long-lasting impacts for Montana families. A study published in January 2020 by the National Bureau of Economic Research used longitudinal data to observe women both before and after abortion denials. The study found that when a woman is unable to secure an abortion she needs, it quadruples the odds of the new mother and her child living in poverty going forward. Therefore, if women cannot afford an abortion and her insurer does not cover the cost, resulting in continuing the pregnancy, the woman is much more likely to continue living in economic distress. Forcing people to borrow money or to balance their needs for health care with their family's most basic economic needs, such as rent and food, doesn't change whether they want to or can continue forward with a pregnancy. It just makes it more burdensome to effectuate their own decisions about their own reproductive health care. This bill would place that burden directly on Montanans with Medicaid coverage, amounting to a ban on abortion for people who are living in poverty. We urge a do not pass on House Bill 862. Thank you.
Next.
Hello, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Keegan Nashan, N-A-S-H-A-N. I am here today testifying on behalf of myself, a woman of reproductive age in Montana. I was born and raised here. It is a place that I love, and I oppose this bill. I am currently on Medicaid. I had an abortion 5 years ago while I was living abroad. When I found out that I was pregnant, I had no doubt in my decision. If this law had been in effect and I had been in Montana when I found out that I was pregnant, it would have prevented my abortion from being covered by my health insurance. This is in stark contrast to the care that I received when I was abroad, where I was given free access to reproductive health care in the family planning wing of the hospital. I will answer any question about my experience that anybody in this chamber might have. Openly and honestly, I have always wanted to be a mother. I knew immediately when I found out that I was pregnant that I was going to have an abortion. A friend of mine had offered to adopt if I wanted to carry my pregnancy to term. I was burnt out after volunteering with refugees for 2 years. I stand before you today, 120 pounds. When I got back from volunteering, I was 106 pounds. I was unhealthy. I wasn't able to care for myself well, and let alone a child. And I've had to learn how to carry the weight of my memories and deal with the PTSD that I had when I came back. Further, I wasn't in a position to grow a healthy child. And when I want to be a mother, I want to give myself every opportunity to grow a healthy child. And for this committee to sit here and have that power, the power of my choice in your hands, is really disconcerting, because I am on Medicaid. I am not, like, I would be the person that you are legislating. So I would like somebody's attention, everybody's attention, just so that way you know that it's me. We Montanans are fully capable of making our own personal healthcare decisions. They are extremely private and difficult decisions. My decision to have an abortion is one of the most difficult decisions that I have made in my life, and it is something that I will carry with me for the rest of my life, and it is my right to carry that decision. Thank you all for your time, and I am available for any questions that anybody has.
Any other opponents in the room? Seeing none, I think we have our proponent online now. So, JC, if we can promote the proponent. Mr. Laszlofy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate the grace. As we discuss this bill today, I think it's important to note what the bill is not about. The bill is not about prohibiting abortion procedures. The bill does not prevent women from obtaining abortions. This bill is not an unconstitutional measure that runs afoul of the Supreme Court's decision in Armstrong. And as you've heard these sorts of arguments from the opponents, but they don't really address the bill that's before you. This bill is really about the use of public funds. The issue before you is whether taxpayers should have to pay for abortions. House Bill 862 prohibits the use of public funds to pay for abortion procedures. Fortunately, this is not a new concept. The question of whether public taxpayer money should be used to pay for abortion procedures has already been answered. The federal government has banned the use of public taxpayer dollars to pay for abortions for nearly 50 years, and this prohibition is constitutional. In fact, back in 1980, the United States Supreme Court determined that it was constitutional to prohibit the use of taxpayer dollars to fund abortions, and that comes from the case of Harris v. McRae. Taxpayer money should not be used to support a procedure that many people find objectionable. This is especially true when that same taxpayer money could be used to provide preventative care or treatment for chronic diseases. Mr. Chairman, members, on behalf of the Montana Family Foundation, we urge you do concur on House Bill 862. Thank you very much.
Thank you. JC, do we have any other proponents online?
There's no other proponents.
Okay, we'll
Mr.
go.
Chairman, there's one opponent.
Thank you. We'll go to opponents online. Thank you.
Good afternoon to the chair and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Park, Catherine Park, Parke. I rise to speak as an opponent of House Bill 862 on behalf of the Montana Democratic Socialists of America. This bill would prohibit uses of public funds or money for abortion. It is actively harmful and wrong to women because it contradicts and undermines their access to health care and safety that includes choice and all the supporting services regarding choice. As previous opponents have strongly testified, prohibiting public funds being expended for an abortion discriminates against lower income women because of its distinct impact on Medicaid covered abortions. It is therefore a cruel bill. There is no other word to use than cruel. It is a cruel bill despite what the proponents have said. In addition, by undermining an essential women's right and specifically discriminating against lower income women, House Bill 862 harms Montana families, harms the economy, and broadly contradicts Montanans' values of supporting one another's freedoms, well-being, and their support of one another. The fiscal note regarding the impact of this bill is clear and important as evidence against passing this bill, as is the technical note that House Bill 862 language conflicts with House Bill 544. I urge you to vote no on House Bill 862. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we don't have any more opponents or proponents in the room or online. We're going to go to informational witnesses.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paula Stannard, S-T-A-N-N-A-R-D. I'm the Chief Legal Counsel for the Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services, here to answer your questions.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Lemieux, L-E-M-I-E-U-X. I am the Interim Division Administrator for the Health Resources Division of the Department of Public Health and Human Services here for informational. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. No other informational witnesses. We'll go to questions from the committee. Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple questions, but first for the sponsor. Mr. Chair, Representative Hopkins, I appreciate you wanting to stick to the public funding side of this bill, but I think that's a little bit tough just because of the language that we've got in the bill. However, I want to ask, because like how many statutes, rules do we need around this? I mean, we had the DPHHS rules that went into effect December, January. We just heard a bill in this committee Monday or Wednesday from Representative Gillette that it was already mentioned conflicts with your bill. Two questions, like why do we have to keep making it harder for women who are low income to access a service? And second, are we addressing in any way the conflicting language with House Bill 544?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, in reverse order, on the coordination or the conflict between the two bills, the sponsor of the other bill and myself has had conversations as well as with legal. We don't really see a conflict that requires an amendment, but obviously as you bring these bills to committees, if the committee feels like there is a conflict there that needs to be addressed, obviously that's well within the committee's prerogative, but the sponsor and myself having had conversations, it does not seem like we will be bringing an amendment forward to deal with the two bills, Mr. Chairman. On the other side, why do we have to keep making it harder for low-income women? I got to say, I'm constantly impressed by how bizarre the world is in 2023. If anybody wants to say that, hey, this is such a personal, important, sacred decision, and therefore you pay for it, and if you don't, you're violating my privacy, is one of the more bizarre things that I have heard in what has been a fairly bizarre legislative session. I am not in any way, shape, or form saying that abortion needs to be illegal. I certainly
have. We're going to have the people in the back of the room maintain civility. And if not, we'll have you taken out by the sergeant of arms. Do you understand that?
Mr. Chair, what I didn't even hear anything.
I saw it.
What?
It wasn't what we see, what we heard. It was what we saw. Mr. Hopkins or Representative Hopkins, you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say that this bill doesn't speak to whether abortion should be legal or not. It doesn't in any way, shape, or form make abortion illegal. It makes what has been a pretty common sense argument in the United States of America for the last 40 years, which is that if you want to access abortion for elective abortion services, pay for it. I mean, with all due respect, we've had what? Planned Parenthood, we've had the ACLU, we've had a group whose literal name includes abortion fund come up here to this podium. Like, I'm pretty sure that if you look at your fiscal note, you're talking about around $380,000 in a year. That's a couple weekends of fundraising for this group. Put together a fund and fund it yourself. All we're saying is that state government does not need to be and should not be in the position of using taxpayer dollars to pay for elective abortions. I don't think that that's out of line. I don't think that that's outrageous. I think that has literally been the stated face of American policy in this area, again, for the better part of 40 years.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have to say my heart is racing from the pounding of your gavel.
Sorry.
I didn't hear or see anything. I was looking at House Bill 544 and listening to Representative Hopkins and glancing. I don't know what happened. I feel a little flustered, and I didn't get to absorb everything that Senator...
I apologize, but we had some antics in the back of the room that were disrespectful to the sponsor of the bill.
Okay. I wanted to ask Representative Hopkins. I do see conflicts, primarily the one that jumps out at me between your bill and 544. Your bill, Representative Hopkins... is limited to exceptions related to rape or incest and physical condition. And Representative Gillette's bill has far more parameters around it, but hers does allow for mental health or severe mental illness. So. I'm just not quite sure what you both are doing there. And again, flustered, Mr. Chair, but I had a question for the young woman, Keegan. I didn't get her last name.
Go ahead.
And, Mr. Chair, would you mind repeating your last name for me?
Nashan, N-A-S-H-A-N.
Nashan, Ms. Nashan. Okay, thank you. I was hoping you could clarify a little bit about your experience abroad. And I don't want to ask a question that's going to make you explain like your PTSD that you indicated you had when you came back. But I could you clarify that a little bit more?
Absolutely.
Okay,
it would be my pleasure. So while I was working with refugees over in Europe, I was in Greece and on the border of Hungary and Serbia. And so along that border, what I was doing was bringing just really basic needs, you know, essential necessities to people. So water, food, blankets. And while I was along that border, there was a lot of violence that was taking place against these people that I'd been working with on a very regular basis. And so I had secondary trauma from watching my friends get beaten repeatedly, frankly. And then further along those lines, when I went to France to have my abortion, and then after I had my abortion, I was sexually assaulted. And so I had PTSD related to that as well when I returned, but it was not in any way related to me having my abortion. And then after I also... returned and chose to tell the person who I'd been sleeping with at the time, he threatened to kill me. And so I also had trauma related to that as well. But we've since.
Thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you. That's all I had. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Molnar.
for the sponsor, please. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hopkins, going to the exceptions for rape and incest. How does that work? Somebody comes in for an abortion, they want it funded through Medicaid, and they say, I was raped 3 months ago by a man of average height, wearing a ball cap, driving a white pickup. How do we prove or disprove that? What is the process to okay the expenditure or not okay the expenditure in a case like that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it might be better to rewrap this to some legal folks here in the room, but I would just say, like, this bill doesn't take any of that into consideration. It is just literally the Hyde Amendment with the same exceptions that are in the Hyde Amendment, and the entirety of the way that that reporting and process works right now is the way that it will be working, from my assumption, tomorrow. It is just simply stating, here is the Hyde Amendment. The state of Montana's tax dollars do not go to elective abortions, and that is all it's saying. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hopkins, do you have someone here you would like to refer this to?
Ms. Stannard, do you want to take that question?
Mr. Chair, Senator Mahler, the way that it occurs right now, and we would not be changing our policy at the department to accommodate this, because we currently do pay for abortions for rape and incest. The provider would complete a form. It's the MA-37. It has three options on it right now. One is that an abortion is necessary to save the life of the mother. One is that the abortion is necessary because the pregnancy is a result of rape or incest. And the third is that the abortion is medically necessary, although not necessary to save the life of the mother. So if a Medicaid beneficiary came to an abortion provider and represented to that abortion provider that her pregnancy was a result of rape or incest, the provider would fill out the form checking that box, and that would be covered by Medicaid. We do not require a police report. We don't require that the provider do anything more.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Gross.
Mr. Chair, I want to do this diplomatically. And I don't know what happened in the back row, but it was startling to me. And I just want to point out that if you're indicating the back row, I think these are members of the public who probably have never been here before, might not know our decorum, and it scared me, and it probably scared some folks in the back row, and I know you generally are just right. Even-handed, Mr.
Noted.
Chair.
Any other questions? Seeing none, the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Look, I'm just like everybody else in this building. I certainly have an opinion when it comes to the subject of abortion. And in cases where we want to have that conversation, I am certainly more than willing to show up and have that conversation. It's just the legality is not the question for House Bill 862. House Bill 862 says nothing about whether abortion should be legal or illegal. House Bill 862 simply says what the Hyde Amendment has been saying for 40 years, which is that tax dollars shouldn't be going to pay for elective abortions. And I got to say, it strains credulity, I think, a little bit to sit here and see groups that I know for a fact, I'm a political animal, I know for a fact they raise millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars coming up here talking about how the world's going to end simply because the state of Montana isn't going to be paying for an elective abortion when they could spend 2 weekends, create an account, pay for every single one of them themselves. That seems like a pretty common sense solution to me, Mr. Chairman, and I would certainly advise those groups to do so. I think 862 is a pretty common sense bill. I think that it was treated as such by the votes of my own chamber. I would ask for a due pass from the committee and would thank the committee for its time here this afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. This ends the hearing on House Bill 862. Members, we're going to take a brief recess just to let the audience know we're not going to take executive action on this bill today. We'll do it next Wednesday. Our transmittal deadlines have been pushed out, so we don't need to do it today and give it some thought. But we will take about a 5-minute recess and come back, maybe 10 minutes.
told to.
Ready. Public Health will come back to order. Senator Weber, is Senator Gross coming back, or is she? We'll wait for her. Members, we're going to start with House Bill 317. But we'll wait for Senator Gross.
Would you like me to hand up first?
Yeah, please. Gross. Okay, Public Health will come back to order, as we already did, I guess. We're going to start with House Bill 317.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 317. Do concur.
Thank you, Senator Lenz. Want to move the First Amendment?
I will, Mr. Chair, and then I'll have Ms. Grzowski describe it. I move to amend House Bill 317 with Amendment HB 0317.002.001.
Okay. Maddie, can you explain this amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a coordination instruction that coordinates House Bill 111 and House Bill 317. House Bill 111 removed language from subsection 4 of 47-1-104 moved it from subsection 4 to subsection, moved it from 4A to 4B. House Bill 317 had added a reference to the sections of 317 to where that language was in 4A. So we added that reference in 4B if both of these bills pass.
Thank you. Any discussion on this? I think it's pretty much administrative. Okay, I think we can do a voice vote. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
Senator Kelker votes aye by proxy.
All right. The amendment passes unanimously.
Senator Heinbaugh, aye by proxy. Senator Glimm, aye by proxy.
Okay. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 317 do concur as amended once.
Thank you. Mr. Vice Chair, can you go through the amendment with us?
Yes, I can. I'll move the second amendment. Mr. Chair, I move to amend House Bill 317 with HB 0317.002.002. Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your patience. I would say, Mr. Chair, how grateful I am that much of this discussion has been moving forward right now. Through over the years with Indian children and what should we do and how does this look like, I do appreciate the fact that there was a concerted effort. And with the law in the Supreme Court possibly being overturned, possibly being modified, that a move was made to fill that gap. But at the same time, I will say that if that ends up being unconstitutional, then what does that look like for Montana if we put a lot of this in there? Now, I realize that this Montana ICWA was not just Indian Child Welfare Act law, but policy rules. There was more than just that in there. And so I originally started with how can we just leave ICWA as the stopgap and then do a sunset. But that the way it's written, there have been a lot of time put into this. So I had to kind of go about it a little differently. And I'll just touch on a few things, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So if we go through the bill, I added in, and it's not highlighted in red, but it starts on 16 through 20 on page 1, about highlighting about the Supreme Court decision has the potential to overturn or modify. Legislature seeks to provide guidance for Indian child protection cases in the interim, and that the legislature does not expect this to be the end all. I felt like that was a good transition. Given that context of how I feel like this isn't solving, this is an ongoing discussion, and I feel like for me personally, as we amend that, that I'm also adding work to myself personally because I care about this. Page 2 struck some language involving legislature that I thought was a little not as concise. I struggled on page 3 with best interest of the Indian child. That is new language. It isn't in ICWA. I did struggle with whether we should go down that road. Now, as this process, I had the Montana Code annotated with me, and page after page after page of child protective statutes, you know, definitions and stuff that is already there, were not... as we modify this, if that's what you wish, then, you know, there is a lot of code there. But I end up striking that, Mr. Chair. Page 4, One of the things that Montana ICWA did was strike a biological child, a member of an Indian tribe. It left it at a member of an Indian tribe or eligible for membership. I feel like the biological child aspect of this is very, very important. I've seen it many, many times in court cases, ICWA cases, the clarity from that, I just think it complicates it without that. I'll try to be brief here, Mr. Chair. Six, treat the child as Indian child unless it is determined on the record the child does not meet the definition of Indian child. Many of these strikes are new language, though there is a couple in ICWA that I've always had issues with. If the tribe doesn't provide response, for instance, on seven, for verification of the child, the non-response does not constitute evidence. And I want to speed up these cases. I don't want them to get lost in the process. Page 9, one of the strikeouts starts on 14, that if this is going to be transferred to a tribal court, that a child 12 years age or older can request this. That seems a little unusual. The parent, I can see, the Indian custodian, the child's tribe, yes, I can see that. I'm not seeing the 12-year-old. And I can't, I don't know if that's here, I think it was, that if when the request for transfer was, yes, on line 15 on page 9, that the response from the tribe would be 75 days. 75 days. This needs a bigger turnaround, and this has to have a discussion. And like I say, as part of Montana, what it looks like in Montana, I mean, that's what the courts will do is wash their hands of it for 75 days, and that child will languish. Let me see. I will just highlight on 13, qualified expert witness. That is also in definitions and struck in definitions, though many of the definitions that were new I didn't have trouble with. But qualified expert witness is not defined in ICWA currently, and this isn't defined well here. I couldn't go along with that. I wish it was better defined in ICWA. Page 16. For the purposes of Section A, harm that may result from interfering with the bond or attachment that may have formed between the child and foster care provider may not be the sole basis or primary reason. Maybe. But we once again need to address how is this impacting the kids. Section 16 that goes over to page 21, placement preferences and adoptions, extended family members, Indian family, the same tribe, or another Indian family, new language had Indian family, the similar culture to Indian child's tribe. I think that I don't know how well defined that is. This is one of the arenas where we don't have enough foster care on the reservations to take care of these kids. And as part of this discussion, I don't know how broad ranging that is, Mr. Chair. I think I'm kind of to the end here. At the active social work that is one of the things in this, yes. And so the balance of it, starting on page 27, is just modifying and referencing Montana Code primarily. So one of the things that was a great positive in ICWA is the active social work that ICWA does. In fact, it's the star of Indian child welfare. There was a reference in there that just providing one contact of services doesn't quantify active social work. Yes, I agree with that. So I was all over the board on this. Is this the way to do it? The way this bill is written? Is this too far? Is this the right time? And I feel like in some ways this is premature, but at the same time, what is the Supreme Court going to do? The last page also addresses the fact that if they strike it down, it is contingent voidness. If it's struck down in its entirety, that this would go away. But if it's in part, our 2-year sunset on this would remain. This requires us, folks, to end the legislature for Indian children, for other children, for the tribes. This is probably going to, Mr. Iwaki, we're going to have, if this goes away, we're going to have compacts with the tribes and such. This is not, we are going to have, it's going to have to continue. Montana is unique. I don't want this bill to die in committee. I want it to be moved forward. I want there to be a stopgap there. And that's why I moved this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Do we have discussion on the amendment? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Senator Lenz, for bringing this amendment. And this was one of the bills that was a priority for the Indian Caucus to take care of our Indian children. And I went through your amendment thoroughly, and of course the bill itself. And I guess I really didn't have any concerns other than, and I like, if we can just go through page 2.
Go ahead, yes. Senator.
Which struck this redundant language. That was good because we need to make it as clear and simple as possible without redundant language. The best interest of the Indian child, that was okay. And then the biological child on page 4 or of a member of an Indian tribe, that was great. And then qualified witness, like you said, was in the definitions. And if you go on, this is page 5, and tribal customary adoptions, we have those, but the point is we've already had a biological child of a member of an Indian tribe, so that was struck, and that was a good one. Okay, page 6, treat the child as an Indian, okay. If you go up to 4, if there's a reason to know the child is an Indian child, but the court does not have sufficient evidence to determine the child is or is not an Indian child, the court shall, and then it confirmed the reports. And then the treat the child as an Indian before this, if you have these reports, then there's no need for line 17 and 18. That was a good strikeout. And on 7, the termination of an Indian by an Indian tribe, and then non-response. I was the court administrator for the Blackfeet Nation, and when we got into these ICWA cases, it was within days. If we knew, and we even got into ICWA cases with other tribes. Okay, for us, we're maternal, meaning that the child goes with the mother's side. And so in Indian custom, the mother has more legal rights or traditional rights than the male. So speaking from my experience with ICWA as being the tribal court administrator for the Blackfeet, this was the tribe is as soon as they're notified by other tribes and or the state, we jump on it. So that was all right with me. That was a good. There's usually very few instances of no response. We have attorneys that just, that's all they do is to protect the Indian children under the laws of ICWA. If we go into 9, I thought that that was kind of a weird one too. Child age of 12. And if you go to the exceptions, the 3, and it outlines that either the child, Indian child's parents, the child's Indian custodian, or the child itself. So really, that was kind of redundant. And then striking the state court was, I think, a good strikeout, because once it goes into the tribal court, the state court has no jurisdiction as it goes through there. Next one. And then it just follows through on page 10, so that's all right. Okay, the full faith and credit. This was kind of an odd little section. I'm glad it went out. And then we had the section 9, section 12, qualified expert. That's already in the definitions. And then the one thing that I liked in your amendment was the strikeout of number on page 16, lines 12 through 15, which says that if the child is bonded to either their or has an attachment to, that's not the sole basis for taking the child out of ICWA. And that's where we get into trouble here with ICWA on the federal level. That's the whole impetus of what is in the Supreme Court right now, is that. So I'm glad that that was gone. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm okay.
No, this is fine.
We're learning.
Page 21. Okay. And it says on page 21, 9 through 11, it said, an Indian family of the same tribe as an Indian child, that's great. Indian C was an Indian family that is of similar culture. You know, this is, like I said, let's go back. The Blackfeet are maternal. The Confederate Salish are maternal. And so, but we are the closest of all the tribes, the Blackfeet and the Salish. And so we are close culturally. We are close family ties. The only ones that are closer than the Blackfeet and Salish are our three sister tribes up north with the Blackfeet, but they're in Canada. So we have the same blood, we have the same names, we have the same customs, and so I am glad that that was taken out. That may be an issue at some time, but as long as it's the same tribe as the Indian child, that would be my only concern on that one, because of our close familial and cultural ties between the two tribes. Okay, let's get back here to 30. What am I on, 12? Oh no, past that. Okay. And I guess the only thing that I have left here is section 16. Where am I? Oh, no, we're right when that one. Page 32, the qualified. Okay, let me get there. The qualified expert witness. Okay, the qualified expert witness on lines 19 through 27 is defined as a member of the tribe, a lay expert witness who has substantial experience, that's pretty good, or a professional person. And in our world, I'm one of those people. I can tell you a lot about, especially in the Blackfeet, where you come from. I'm a historian. Who your people are and where your bloodline comes from. And so I would be one of those lay experts to tell you where this child belongs other than with the biological parents. Okay, and then also that the member of the child is recognized in that Indian community or that tribal community. Okay, we got children that are from different reservations, but their mother or their grandmother may be Blackfeet. And so they live within our community. They may not be enrolled there, but traditionally they are part of our community, so they're recognized as community. So when the Blackfeet tribe and Blackfeet Tribal Court had to deal with other tribes, we had to go back and say, this is what it is. And we made those concessions with other tribes. It could be Navajo. It could be way down in Four Corners area. It could be Yakima. It could be Warm Springs. You know, it could be Fort Peck or Fort Belknap. But we would go in and we would make those, that argument to those tribes. And most likely or not, they would say, okay, we all understand what the maternal lineage is and the matrilineal focal is on all of our tribes. So that was, I thought that was a good one. Thank you, sir. And just the last page, the contingency voidness and the effective date, I kind of had a little heartburn on that one. You know, should the federal ICWA go down, I want Montana to be able to support the Indian children of this state. And ICWA has, everybody knows what ICWA is. We have all the experts. We have our legal staffs on this. They know what it is. And so I just had a little heartburn on the contingency voidness. I understand it. And then the last part was the effective dates. Yes, that is going to be heard within the next few months, but we have to have a place to fall. And Montana should be part of the group of states that have developed their own ICWA. And you know, I read your bill as well. Of course, I did. Mm-hmm. It's in our committee. And I like that too. And it's built on this. And so all the children in Montana will be protected. But this is for Indian children specifically. And so with that, I have to say that I support this amendment. And I want to get 317 on the floor. And it's going to be re-evaluated within 2 years. So I think we should be able to get this through and then relook at it in the next session.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Weber, for your very thoughtful analysis and helping us understand some of your tribal customs. And thank you, Senator Linz, for the real hard work you put into this. I really appreciate it. Any other discussion on the bill? Yes. Seeing none, Senator Beard.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to, you know, just expound on your appreciation of the work that went into this, because I was receiving numerous messages from Senate District 40 residents saying, please do this. We need to do this. We need to do it now. And relaying it back to the chair and Vice Chair Lenz, You spent, what, weekend before last or last weekend?
Couple weekends. Yeah.
Just mired in trying to pull this together. You gave up your weekend to pull this together for us so we could have a workable document to go forward and to get this out of this committee and onto the Senate floor. And that's what we're doing. So thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you. Senator Molnar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wouldn't want to see his head swell anymore, but Senator Lenz has done a yeoman's job on this. And he's probably the best one on the committee to do it. He's so familiar with all this stuff. I'd have been starting from scratch and getting nowhere. But I think that what people need to understand, and not all of them will, that if this does not pass and ICWA gets struck down, partially struck down, there's nothing in Montana. It's just federal. It's not even federal law. It's federal strike downs, and things are missing, and somebody's got to recodify. And it's going to be a mess. If this passes and the Supreme Court strikes Sections 1, 3, and 6, and uphold 7, 9, and 10, whatever that is, somebody, can come back in the next session and make our law match so that somebody isn't going to federal court and getting clobbered because they're outside the law. So does this deserve to go to the floor? As much as any bill I've ever seen go to the floor, it does. Will that be the final say? Let's assume it passes. And let's assume that there are those that are still opposed. Representative Wendy Boy can say, please do not concur. It comes back to a full conference committee, quite possibly, conference committee or full conference committee. The work on this is not done. I'm pretty sure about that. Even if it just passes and passes and the governor signs it, it goes to the Supreme Court. This is not done. This is going to be in motion for a couple years. I did not understand the comment of we need to have a place to land with the other tribes. No, we need a place for Montana to be solid in what happens. I don't care what happens in Arizona, and that's their legislature. This legislature should stand by having a solid an act as we can have and be prepared to modify to make sure that when somebody reads it, it matches federal law and it passes muster so they can go forward. Anything else is a disservice.
Thank you, Senator Molnar. Any other comments on discussion on the bill? Seeing none, I think we could take a voice vote on it. Those in favor of the motion of Senator Lenz signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Caught proxy votes.
Senator Kilker votes aye by proxy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Heinbaugh is aye by proxy. Senator Glimm is nay by proxy.
Thank you.
That's the downside when you don't get to be here for the discussion. But
so the bill.
Oh, we're now on. Oh, Ms. Senator Glimm. Did you want a different vote on that?
That was a vote on the amendment.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 317 as amended twice, do concur.
Okay. Just for the record, that was an 8-1 vote because Senator Glimm was no by proxy. Okay. Wasn't clear, I don't think. All right, Mr. Vice Chair.
I just moved it, Mr.
Okay,
Chair, as amended twice.
Thank you. I was back on the clarifiers in the previous vote. Okay, so the bill has been amended twice. It's been moved as amended twice. Any discussion on the bill as amended twice?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Weber.
I believe we kind of said it all about this bill, and I really have to applaud the work of Representative Wendy Boy and the good work of Senator Lenz in getting this product out, and that, as I said before, this was a priority for the Indian Caucus, was this because we see things changing within to take care of our own children. I just have to say one thing. Should that go down in the federal court or the Supreme Court and this not pass, then there's going to be a huge hit to Montana budget. Because right now, if the foster care system is any indication, 30% of those children in foster care are Native Americans, that would just go up. So that means that it may be a huge hit to the state to try to take care of that population, or our population, I guess. So I just want to say I'm going to be a yes on this bill, and I hope you all vote with me.
Thank you, Senator. I think we can do a voice vote on this one, too. Those in favor of the motion to pass 317 as amended twice, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Same sign. Okay.
Senator Kelker votes aye by proxy.
Senator Heinbaugh votes no by proxy.
Okay, the motion passes 7-2. We will move the bill forward to the Senate floor. Senator Weber, I'm sure you want to carry this.
I will.
Okay,
thank
great.
You, sir.
All right, so next we'll go to House Bill 706.
Not 559.
We can do 559 next.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 559 do concur.
Okay, House Bill 559 has been moved do concur. Discussion on 559. Senator Beard.
Go ahead. You're first.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate this bill, I do recall, and I can't remember where or by whom, said this was a bit duplicative, redundant. So if anybody can help me out, if what they might have recalled. But I do think I'm going to just go ahead and be a no on this.
Okay. Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, this was just signage. State licensed child placing agencies shall display signage and literature regarding requirements and process of being a licensed foster parent. Basically, they're just putting out signs in there. And I think the there was really no fiscal anything on there. You know, maybe a little redundant, but, you know, it's just a signage bill.
Members, I can appreciate the fact that we want a sign or some literature, but I don't really think that we need to be passing laws to tell the department to put out literature. So I'm going to be a no on this bill. Any other discussion?
Substitute motion to table.
Okay. Non-debatable motion. We'll take a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Lenz.
Aye.
Senator Beard.
Yes.
Senator Glimm.
Yes.
Senator Gross.
Yes.
Senator Heinbaugh.
Aye by proxy. No, excuse me. Yeah. Yes, aye by proxy.
Yes, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Vice Chair Kelker.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Molnar. Yes. Senator Weber.
Yes.
Chair McGilvery.
Yes.
9-0.
Okay, bill has been laid on the table, 9-0. Next, we'll go to House Bill 706.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 706. Do concur.
All right. You've heard the motion of the vice chair. Discussion on 706. This was a bill by Representative Hastings establishing the Medical Practice Protection Act. Discussion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'm grateful that Representative Hastings now understands what a title in the MCA is. She came in late, and give her grace. She's been working very hard. But I do like this bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Senator Gross, can we take a voice vote? Do you want to go? All right, let's go a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Lenz.
Aye.
Senator Beard.
Yes.
Senator Glim.
Yes.
Senator Gross.
No.
Senator Heinbaugh.
Aye, by proxy.
Vice Chair Kelker.
No, by proxy.
Senator Molnar.
Yes.
Senator Weber.
No.
Chair McGilvery.
Yes.
6 yes, 3 no.
Okay, the bill moves to the floor for second reading. Do I have a volunteer to carry the bill? Senator Beard will carry the bill.
You're awesome.
All right, next we'll go to 715.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 715. Do concur.
Okay, a bill by Representative Carlson, Act revising laws related to exemptions to school immunization requirements. Discussion on this bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Weber.
You know, I'm going to be a no on this bill. There was no proponents. There was several opponents. And one of the questions was, how are you going to enforce this? You can't enforce it. And there was issues of coordinating with federal law. So I have to be a no on this one.
Okay. Just further discussion. I like the bill. I just think it's informing parents that they have an option to have exemptions from vaccines, either whether it's a medical or a religious exemption. There's no wrong in giving parents information about what the law says. So, particularly when it's this serious of an issue. So, any other questions or any discussion? Senator Beard.
Mr. Chair, I do recall that during the discussions, maybe it was explained by the sponsor of the bill, but it was just, my understanding of it was just stating what the law already is and saying what cannot be done because the law protects. So I'm going to be a yes on this as well.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Lenz.
Aye.
Senator Beard.
Yes.
Senator Glim.
Yes.
Senator Gross.
No.
Senator Heinbaugh.
Aye, by proxy.
Vice Chair Kelker.
No, by proxy.
Senator Molnar.
Yes.
Senator Weber.
No.
Chair McGilvery.
Yes.
Vote is 6 yes, 3 no.
Okay, 6 yes, 3 no. The bill goes to the second reading. I'll take this one.
Okay.
Okay, members, that's all the executive action we'll do tonight. I hope you have a great Easter break. We'll come back and we'll do, I think we have one bill for next Wednesday right now. Oh, we will. As soon as we talk. All right, so public health is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know, he doesn't even know.
Thank you, Susan.
Oh, you're welcome.
Senator, yeah. I was going to ask you a question.